Hey, everybody. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Mike Malloy here. Did you watch any of the hearings today? It was like watching, I swear to God, for the most part, to me, it was like watching a school teacher and talking to a group of fifth graders, especially when the Republicans opened their mouths. The Democrats were okay, I guess. Maybe I'm just still kind of biased towards Democrats or in favor of Democrats, but because I used to be one. But it was really something. We're going to get to that a little bit later tonight. Also tonight, coming up fairly quickly, I'm going to pry open again the 9/11 stuff. Haven't done it for a while, and I got an email today that I want to share with you about the lies perpetrated by the Bush crime family and continue to be covered up by the Obama administration regarding what happened on September 11, 2001. You know, it's all lies. You know, everything that we were told. Yeah, hell, even the co-chairman of the 9/11 commission admit now that it's just a bunch of BS. Anyway, we'll get to that very quickly. First of all, about 2 weeks ago, the Whirlpool Corporation. Whirlpool. Is that the one with the Whirlpool repairman? Never anything to do. That was Maytag. Okay. Whirlpool in Evansville, Indiana, a couple of weeks ago, said it was going to cut 1,100 jobs from the Whirlpool plant there. I'm sure you remember this was all over the news. They're going to close a refrigerator factory in Evansville and move it to Mexico. And ice makers, that's refrigerators with the freezers on top. That's going to be produced by Mexicans now. Ice makers produced in Evansville will be moved to a yet-to-be-decided location, probably be someplace in Eastern Europe. The jobs will be eliminated by the middle of this year. Whirlpool spokeswoman said at a press conference that the plant closing had nothing to do with worker performance. The decision, she said, is about cost. Uh-huh. Okay. Another American corporation that is not making enough profit to satisfy their stakeholders and their corporate greed bastards and decided to cut the one thing you can always cut in a capitalist society, workers. It's the first thing to go. That's why unions were put together. That's a little news flash for the dumbass right-wingers who listen to this program. But I digressed. Now, the workers there responded in Evansville by organizing rallies with the help of their union, organizing rallies to try to whip up support among the people of Evansville, trying to get some concern worked up. Of course, Americans in other parts of the country really don't care. I'm not saying that they don't. I don't mean they don't care because they're cold and crass and bastards. They don't care because they have their own problems working as this country continues to decline. But the workers in Evansville decided to hold rallies and try to whip up publicity and public opinion and try to get the Whirlpool executives not to move the plant to Mexico, where the workers will work for one-tenth, if that, of what Indiana workers will work for. So, how has Paul Coburn, Whirlpool executive, I don't know if he's a CEO, how has he responded to the reaction by the workers at this plant? He sent out a memo warning the Whirlpool workers not to participate in a rally, I think tomorrow, to save their jobs. Now, this is the kind of stuff that makes me cuss on radio. This rancid son of a bitch, Whirlpool executive Paul Coburn, who told the city of Evansville and all these workers, go screw yourself, I'm taking it to Mexico. Bite me, I'm leaving, I'm out of here. I'm taking all your jobs. I don't give a damn about you. I'll have a nice house in the Mexican Riviera. You dumb bastards here in Evansville, Indiana, goodbye. Thanks for all the fish. And then when they protest, this unconscionable prick has the audacity to threaten them. Now, the threat is implicit in his warning not to demonstrate, not to make a big deal about the fact they're losing their lives. The threat is, you know, we said we were going to close the plant in the middle of June. You guys keep screwing with me, and I'll close the goddamn thing in March. That's the threat. Now, there's a little bit more to the story. Let me switch to Prairie 2. Initial jobless claims jumped again this week, and the corporate media acts as if there was some mystery on why this is happening. It's not rocket science. Take Whirlpool in Indiana. After taking a $19 million grant from the Department of Energy under the Economic Recovery Act, they will be sending another 1,100 union jobs to Mexico. Besides eliminating these jobs, the jobs of all sorts of people in the area will also disappear. Parts manufacturers, machine shops, and companies that provide a variety of industrial services will have to cut back, if not close. This then ripples through the community, closing everything from the local accountant to barbershops to lawyers, anybody. The Walmart hasn't put out of business already. Even Walmart will lose business, but they can just fire some people. All they need really is a stock boy, a door greeter, and a checker. Hell, give the old guy at the door some roller skates and he can do all three jobs. Then, of course, the city and the county in Indiana lose out too. You can bet they gave tax incentives to get the plant. We'll get to keep the infrastructure costs, but not the jobs. Normally, an economic hit like this would create more government jobs like social services, police, and prisons, but there is no money for that anymore. So that will be cut too, despite the increased need. This goes on every day all across America, and all we hear about is Tiger Woods losing his corporate sponsors. They have too high morals to put up with him. The corporate media did let us hear Mr. Toyota apologize for building cars with defects. No U.S. executive would ever apologize before Congress. No mention, though, of why he's closing a large plant in California. It didn't even occur to any congressman to ask him about it. Toyota will begin building more cars in Japan because, you see, Japan has a government that doesn't accept that the earth is flat. Too bad we can't get one of those here. Prairie 2. But it all ties together, doesn't it? So while we have been focused on things more interesting than the fate of 1,100 workers, their families, the city of Evansville, the county, the state, the jobs, the ripple effect, we've been focusing on other stuff. The people in Evansville, Indiana, Whirlpool. The home office of Whirlpool is not China. The home office of Whirlpool is, Michigan, Benton Harbor, Michigan. And as a spokeswoman for Whirlpool said, well, no, it's not because of worker inefficiency or anything the workers have done. We just don't want the sons of bitches anymore. We don't care. They got a union. Tell the union to pound sand up his ass. We're out of here. We don't care. We want profit. We are capitalists. And the first thing to get the knife in the ribs when we want more profit, what, you think we're going to cut our executive pay? Are you out of your goddamn minds? The workers. Workers are scum. We only put up with them because we need them until we find cheaper workers. And you know what? After we've been in Mexico for a while building these goddamn refrigerators, then we'll move the jobs to some island in the South Pacific. And then when the island in the South Pacific sinks because of global warming and rising sea levels, we'll move the goddamn thing to Poland. And after Poland sinks, to hell with it.
Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Let me make a news flash, an announcement. This goes out to the right wingers, to the conservatives. You know, you people really turn my stomach because you have been like sheep in allowing this country to go down. On the other hand, so have the liberals for the most part. We have raised a little bit of stink, but let me just suggest something to whether you're left wing or right wing. The whole goddamn country is collapsing. That should be apparent to anyone. There is no equivocation about that. It is collapsing. Now, if the time ever comes, and this is addressed to you right-wingers, because let me tell you something. With your little toy pop guns and your... I don't give a goddamn if you have a 50-caliber sniper rifle. It doesn't mean anything. Get one of these pilotless drones flying around. And don't give me any crap about your Oath Keeper organization and so on and so forth. If you get 5% of the army to defect, that doesn't mean anything. You're going to be so dead. You get one of these drones that wipe out Afghan families, target you and your playboys when you're out in the snow, running around going, boo, here come the liberals. You people are stupid as dirt, but I'm going to take mercy on you. I'm going to take some mercy on you. Let me just explain something to you. When you finally realize what's happened, when you finally realize that your biggest enemy are these neo-fascists, that all these dumb sons of bitches running around in their white hoods and so on and so forth have nothing in store for you but death. At the hands of the United States Marine Corps. Because how long do you think a squad of Marines will put up with your stupid little antics? I don't care where you live. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, someplace in Michigan. I don't give a damn. It'll take these guys about 30 seconds to turn you into grease spots in the snow. So wise up, boys, okay? There's one way out of this. And when you're ready to hear it, you just grab the nearest liberal. I'm not talking about the pansy-ass liberals. I'm talking about the hard-ass liberals. And you ask us what to do, and we'll tell you. We'll tell you how to get your country back. And it's not going to be with violence. That's not going to work. Any violent thoughts I've had have been directed at you guys because I think you're such a threat. But the way to get this country back? Well, when the time comes when you've had enough, you've seen enough of your jobs go away, when it finally dawns on you that this country is not going to start producing those jobs that are now gone, when it dawns on you that there is not going to be health care reform that's going to benefit you, when all this starts to sink into your little pumpkin heads, you come to us and we'll tell you what to do. And I'll give you a hint. The first thing to do, the very first step, the first thing, is everybody stop everything. Just stop. You stay home. That's going to be easier and easier with the unemployment, the underemployment rate approaching 30% in this country now. Huh? That's all you have to do. Put your guns away. Climb down off your high horses. Get rid of your white sheets and your Confederate flags. And sit your asses down. And don't do anything. Bring this country to a halt. That's all you have to do. Turn off the goddamn television. Don't go to the store. Just stay home. That's all you have to do. One day of that, and all of a sudden, it's going to dawn on the power that the jig is up. Now, if you want to know what step 2, 3, 4, up to step 70 or 80 is, after you do the sit-down, we'll let you know. We'll clue you in. The liberals, the union organizers, the people who still remember how to organize civil rights demonstrations, how to organize human rights demonstrations, we'll clue you in. It has not a goddamn thing to do with guns, you dummies, you monkeys. It has nothing to do with guns. It has to do with the power of silence, the power of inaction. The power of sitting your ass down. That gets the attention of power very quickly. You know why? Because they can't respond. You take your gun and aim it at a Marine someplace, your ass will be dead before you can pull the trigger. They would love to see you gun boys pop up out of the weeds like so many whack-a-moles. Trust me. So while corporate America continues to beat our asses bloody without let up, while the Republican Party continues to mock us and the Democratic Party continues to sit on its ass and do nothing, while all that continues, if you ever, Mr. and Mrs. America, decide you really want to make this stop, sit down and shut up. That's all you have to do for one 24-hour period. That's all you have to do. And then get on the phone and call us liberals and ask us, okay, what do we do now? And we're not interested in power. We'll tell you what to do. And then we'll step back and let it happen. You want to get this country back? That's what you do. Don't kid yourself with your goddamn pop guns. Are you serious? Have an F-16 fly over your little encampment somewhere in the mountains. Boom. And it's all over. When you're serious, you'll know what to do. Paul Craig Roberts is. He is the former Assistant Secretary of the United States Treasury in the Reagan administration. Also, former Associate Editor of the Wall Street Journal. He has a couple of books out, The Tyranny of Good Intentions, also How the Economy Was Lost. Paul Craig Roberts. This is what he says. Sit back, put your feet up. The Washington Times is a newspaper that looks with favor upon the Bush-Cheney-Obama neocon wars of aggression in the Middle East and favors making terrorists pay for 9/11. Therefore, I was surprised to learn on February 24th that the most popular story on the newspaper's website for the past 3 days was the Inside the Beltway report entitled Explosive News about the 31 press conferences in cities in the United States and abroad on February 19th held by Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, an organization of professionals which now has 1,000 members. I was even more surprised that the news report treated the press conference seriously. How did three World Trade Center skyscrapers suddenly disintegrate into fine dust? How did massive steel beams in three skyscrapers suddenly fail as a result of short-lived, isolated, and low-temperature fires? The New York Times or the Washington Times reported, quote, 1,000 architects and engineers want to know and are calling on Congress to order a new investigation into the destruction of the Twin Towers and Building 7, end quote. The paper reports that the architects and engineers have concluded that the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, provided, quote, insufficient, contradictory, and fraudulent accounts of the circumstances of the tower's destruction, end quote, and are calling for a grand jury investigation of NIST officials. The newspaper reports that Richard Gage, the spokesperson for the architects and engineers, said, quote, government officials will be notified that misprision of treason, U.S. Code 18, Section 2382, is a serious federal offense which requires those with evidence of treason to act. The implications are enormous and may have profound impact on the forthcoming trial of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. End quote. There's now an organization, Firefighters for 9/11 Truth. At the main press conference in San Francisco, Eric Lawyer, the head of that organization, announced the firefighters' support for the architects and engineers' demands. He reported that no forensic investigation was made of the fires that are alleged to have destroyed the three buildings, and that this failure constitutes a crime. Mandated procedures were not followed, and instead of being preserved and investigated, the crime scene was destroyed. He also reported that there are more than 100 first responders who heard and experienced explosions, and that there is radio, audio, and video evidence of explosions. Also at the press conference, physicist Stephen Jones presented the evidence of nanothermite in the residue of the World Trade Center buildings, found by an international panel of scientists led by the University of Copenhagen, nanochemist Professor Niels Harrit. Nanothermite is a high-tech explosive pyrotechnic capable of instantly melting steel girders. Before we yell, conspiracy theory! We should be aware that the architects, engineers, firefighters, and scientists offer no theory. They provide evidence that challenges the official theory. And this evidence is not going to go away. If expressing doubts or reservations about the official story in the 9/11 Commission report makes a person a conspiracy theory kook, then we have to include both co-chairmen of the 9/11 Commission and the Commission's legal counsel, all of whom have written books in which they clearly state that they were lied to by government officials when they conducted their investigation, or rather, when they presided over the investigation conducted by Executive Director Philip Zelikow, a member of President George W. Bush's transition team and Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, and a co-author of Bush Secretary of State Condi Mushroom Cloud Rice. There will always be Americans who will believe whatever the government tells them, no matter how many times they know the government has lied to them. Despite expensive wars that threaten Social Security and Medicare, wars based on non-existent Iraqi weapons of mass destruction, non-existent Saddam Hussein connections to al-Qaeda, non-existent Afghan participation in the 9/11 attacks, and the non-existent Iranian nukes that are being hyped as a reason for the next American war of aggression in the Middle East, more than half of the U.S. population still believes the fantastic story that the government has told them about 9/11, a Muslim conspiracy that outwitted the entire Western world. Moreover, it doesn't matter to these Americans how often the government changes its story. For example, Americans first heard of Osama bin Laden because the Bush regime pinned the 9/11 attacks on him. Over the years, video after video was served up to the gullible American public of bin Laden's pronouncements. Experts dismissed the videos as fakes, but Americans remained their gullible selves. Then suddenly last year, a new 9/11 mastermind emerged to take bin Laden's place, the captive Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. The detainee waterboarded 183 times until he confessed to masterminding the 9/11 attack. In the Middle Ages, confessions extracted by torture constituted evidence. But self-incrimination has been a no-no in the U.S. legal system since our founding. But with the Bush regime and the Republican federal judges, whom we were assured would defend the U.S. Constitution, the self-incrimination of Sheikh Mohammed stands today as the only evidence the U.S. government has that Muslim terrorists pulled off 9/11. The only evidence the U.S. government has that Muslim terrorists pulled off 9/11. If a person considers the feats attributed to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, they are simply unbelievable. Sheikh Mohammed is a more brilliant, capable superhero than V in the fantasy movie V for Vendetta. Sheikh Mohammed outwitted all 16 U.S. intelligence agencies, along with those of all U.S. allies or puppets, including Israel's Mossad. No intelligence service on Earth, or all of them combined, was a match for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Sheikh Mohammed outwitted the U.S. National Security Council, Dick Cheney, the Pentagon, the State Department, NORAD, the U.S. Air Force, and air traffic control. He caused airport security to fail four times in one morning. He caused the state-of-the-art air defenses of the Pentagon to fail, allowing a hijacked airliner, which was off course all morning, while the U.S. Air Force, for the first time in history, was unable to get a aloft interceptor aircraft to crash into the Pentagon. Sheikh Mohammed was able to perform these feats with unqualified pilots. Sheikh Mohammed, even as a waterboarded detainee, has managed to prevent the FBI from releasing the many confiscated videos that would show, according to the official story, the hijacked airliner hitting the Pentagon. How naive do you have to be to believe that any human, or for that matter, Hollywood fantasy character, is this powerful and this capable? If Sheikh Mohammed has these superhuman capabilities, how did the incompetent Americans catch him? This guy's a patsy, tortured into confession in order to keep the American naifs believing the government's conspiracy theory. What is going on here is that the U.S. government has to bring the 9/11 mystery to an end. The government must put on trial and convict a culprit so that it can close the case before it explodes. Anyone waterboarded 183 times would confess to anything. The U.S. government has responded to the evidence being arrayed against its outlandish 9/11 conspiracy theory by redefining the war on terror from external to internal enemies. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano said on Friday the 21st, or on February 21st, that American extremists are now as big a concern as international terrorists. Extremists, of course, are people who get in the way of the government's agenda, such as the 1,000 architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. The group used to be 100. Now it's 1,000. What if it becomes 10,000? Cass Sunstein, an Obama regime official, has a solution for the 9/11 skeptics. Infiltrate them and provoke them into statements and actions that can be used to discredit or to arrest them. But get rid of them at all costs. Why employ such extreme measures against alleged kooks if they only provide entertainment and laughs? Is the government worried that they are onto something? Instead, why doesn't the U.S. government simply confront the evidence that is presented and answer it? If the architects, engineers, firefighters, and scientists are merely kooks, it would be a simple matter to acknowledge their evidence and refute it. Why is it necessary to infiltrate them with police agents and to set them up? Many Americans would reply that their government would never dream of killing Americans by hijacking airliners and destroying buildings in order to advance a government agenda. But on February 3rd, National Intelligence Director Dennis Blair told the House Intelligence Committee that the U.S. government can assassinate its own citizens when they are overseas. No arrest or trial or conviction of a capital crime is necessary. Just straight out murder. Now, there's more to this. We're going to take a break and come back and finish it up. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Because without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Back to Paul Craig Roberts. You can find this at opednews.com. Opednews.com. He continues, obviously, if the U.S. government can murder its citizens abroad, it can murder them at home, and has done so. For example, 100 Branch Davidians were murdered in Waco, Texas, by the Clinton administration for no legitimate reason. The government just decided to use its power, knowing that it could get away with it, which it did. Americans who think their government is some kind of morally pure operation would do well to familiarize themselves with Operation Northwoods. Operation Northwoods was a plot drawn up by the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff for the CIA to commit acts of terrorism in American cities and fabricate evidence blaming Castro so that the U.S. could gain domestic and international support for regime change in Cuba. The secret plan was nixed by then-President John F. Kennedy and was declassified by the John F. Kennedy Assassination Records Review Board. It is available online in the National Security Archives. There are numerous online accounts available, including Wikipedia. James Bamford's book, Body of Secrets, also summarizes the plot. Quote, Operation Northwoods, which had the written approval of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Lyman Lemnitzer, and every member of the Joint Chiefs, called for innocent people to be shot on American streets, for boats carrying refugees fleeing Cuba to be sunk on the high seas, for a wave of violent terrorism to be launched in Washington, D.C., Miami, and elsewhere. People would be framed for bombings they did not commit. Planes would be hijacked. Using phony evidence, all of it would be blamed on Castro, thus giving General Lemnitzer and his cabal the excuse, as well as the public and international backing they needed, to launch their war. End quote. Prior to 9/11, the American neoconservatives were explicit that the wars of aggression that they intended to launch in the Middle East required, quote, a new Pearl Harbor, end quote. For their own good and that of the wider world, Americans need to pay attention to the growing body of experts who are telling them that the government's account of 9/11 fails their investigation. 9/11 launched the neoconservative plan for U.S. world hegemony. As I write, the U.S. government is purchasing the agreement of foreign governments that border Russia to accept U.S. missile interceptor bases. The U.S. intends to ring Russia with U.S. missile bases from Poland through Central Europe and Kosovo to Georgia, Azerbaijan, and Central Asia. U.S. Envoy Richard Holbrooke declared on February 20th that al-Qaeda is moving into former Central Asian constituent parts of the Soviet Union, such as Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Kazakhstan. Holbrooke is soliciting U.S. bases in these former Soviet republics under the guise of the ever-expanding War on Terror. The U.S. has already encircled Iran with military bases. The U.S. government intends to neutralize China by seizing control over the Middle East and cutting China off from oil. This plan assumes that Russia and China, nuclear-armed states, will be intimidated by U.S. anti-missile defenses and acquiesce to U.S. hegemony, and that China will lack oil for its industries and military. The U.S. government is delusional. Russian military and political leaders have responded to the obvious threat by declaring NATO a direct threat to the security of Russia and by announcing a change in Russian war doctrine to the preemptive launch of nuclear weapons. The Chinese are too confident to be bullied by a washed-up American superpower. The morons in Washington are pushing the envelope of nuclear war. The insane drive for American hegemony threatens life on Earth. The American people, by accepting the lies and deceptions of their government, are facilitating this outcome. Paul Craig Roberts. You know, I was talking to Bob Alexander one time. Matter of fact, it might have been in one of his blogs, one of his moments with Bob. I don't remember. But everything that has occurred in this country to destroy this country, and I'm talking about here in the immediate present, had its beginnings with September 11, 2001. Everything. The destruction of our constitutional rights that occurred, of course, under a Republican administration. The continuing outsourcing of American jobs. I think that corporate America understands that this country is on its deathbed. The expansion of U.S. military power all around the globe. While everything in this country goes to hell, we can still find $700 billion for the Defense Department, the War Department. Education's in the tank. Jobs are in the tank. Healthcare's in the tank. Infrastructure is in the tank. Son of a bitch. Is nobody paying attention to this? And running around in the woods with your rifles is not going to do a damn thing. I don't quite get that. Unless these rifle toters really do believe that when the fascists finally take over the United States and turn this place into one huge slave camp, that they, the rifle runner arounders, are somehow going to be deputized and turned into the brown shirts. Boy, are you guys wrong. Report was a lie. A lot of people say, well, Malloy, you ought to talk about it more. Why? I mean, who doesn't understand that it was a goddamn lie, the worst lie ever perpetrated on the American public? Now, while we're in this break, go to Google, type in Northwoods, and read it. Did you watch any of the hearings today? Yeah, I did too. Like I said, I certainly can tell the difference between Obama and these Republican little boys. A couple of them had their asses cracked pretty good by President Bojica. Whap, whap. Especially McCain. But the whole thing sucked. You know it as well as I do. Obama scored some good points. He really did. He made some good points. But he made points on an issue that is ridiculous to begin with. Because again, what is the Democratic plan for health insurance reform in this country? It is unworkable. The Republicans have nothing. Nothing. You know what their solution is? Allow insurance companies to sell their product over state lines. Woo! Son of a bitch, that's going to work. Obama's plan, or the Democratic Party's plan, is a wonderful, beautiful 40 million piece gift wrapped up in tinsel and tinfoil and handed to this filthy, murderous insurance industry. These pig sons of bitches who feast on grief and anguish and fear and anxiety. So Obama's points, while they were excellent points, wonderful points, if they were talking about the difference between Democrats and Republicans in how to rebuild the infrastructure. But that's not what they were talking about. What the country needs is a single-payer healthcare system. That's all. Like the one in Canada, like the one in France, like the one in most civilized countries. We need to take the health insurance industry out. We need to eliminate it from this country. But there are two chances of that happening, slim and none. Public option, forget about it. It's not going to, I don't give a goddamn how many senators or representatives sign on to the so-called public option. And Obama was even defending that. You know, well, this is not government. It's an insurance exchange. Oh, come on, please. So, while Obama made great points, and you know, he always does. You put Obama head to head against any Republican. Hell, put him up against 30 Republicans, and he will eat their lunch. They're no match for him. Absolutely no match for him. He's smarter. He's quicker in his adroitness in dancing around an argument, making his points, debating his points, closing in on dumbass statements by people like John Boehner or any of the Republicans. I mean, I give him that. I really do. But that's not what this is about. This is not about President Bojica making all these great big points about how he's a better debater and more intelligent and has his facts more correct and has a telegraphic, photographic memory. He can kick any Republican's ass, and the more Republicans, the better. The more he just kicks faster. But, you know, a lot of liberals or Democrats or intelligent, normal people can do that. Republican members of the Congress are the dumbest bastards ever collected in one place on earth. They are stupider than the old Soviet Politburo dudes. Remember all those pictures from back in the 60s and 70s and 80s? These gray-looking Russians in their great coats and their funny hats standing up on the wall of the Kremlin watching the great big SS-500 missiles go by, or whatever those monstrous goddamn things were called. You know, the ones that could drop a nuclear weapon down somebody's chimney in Ames, Iowa. They were so closely targeted. But that's what the Republicans remind me of, even the young ones. This Eric Cantor, I swear to God, what is this boy's story? What is it that he's bucking to become? Forget it, Eric. Forget it. You're going nowhere. You're going to wind up like what's his name? The one that used to bring his dead baby home from the hospital, the miscarriage. You know who I mean. So Bojica just ran circles around him, and parts of the confrontation were interesting, but it was a wrong issue. The issue should have been from the very beginning, and we all know this. Come on, this is no great insight on the part of your humble and obedient servant here. This is what anybody with an eighth grade education would understand from the get-go. We need single payer. We need socialized medicine. We need a government-run plan, not government doctors, but government payout. And everybody pays for it. And you pay a tax. And the tax may cost you $25 a month. Ooh, scary. Or 50, or 75, but God damn it, you pay it. And then when you need health care, you got it. You need a quadruple bypass, you got it. Your appendix ruptured, we'll take care of you. You got a baby coming, no problem. Your kid has an ear infection, done. Not in this country. Not in this country. Oh, hell no, not in this country. No. So while it was interesting theater, it was hog snot, every single bit of it. Good on you, Bojica, for running circles around him. But on the other hand, you know, when you put a giant in the ring with a bunch of little tiny dwarfs, what do you expect? The Congressional Progressive Caucus released a statement today. And it says, today's summit was an important opportunity for the American people to learn about each party's health care proposals. It was good for Americans to hear a detailed, uninterrupted discussion of the facts instead of misleading statements designed to scare those who would benefit the most from comprehensive health care reform. And it goes on and on and on. Polls continue to show that the public option is the part of health care reform that the public is consistently behind. Indeed, the public option is more popular than the Senate health care bill as a whole. And it goes on and on and on. New momentum in support of the public option is growing in Congress. It is included in the House bill, and a number of senators expressing their support for inclusion of the public option in a reconciliation package is growing daily. The public option is a scam. It's not going to work. What we need is single-payer health care. The one thing that the Republicans say that I agree with, and that is, let's tear all this up and start over. Only, yeah, let's tear it all up and start over. Kick every goddamn Republican out of the room. Go away. Scat. Scram. Get out of here. And then have the Democrats sit down and come to consensus that what the country needs is single payer. Medicare for everybody. I don't care what you call it. That's it. And then immediately write up the bill. Write it up on one goddamn page of a piece of paper. What do you need? One piece. All right, two. And then march it over to the House and the Senate and vote on it. Simple up or down. And if it fails, then back off. To hell with it. Let the insurance industry continue the anal rape that it's putting this country through. Go ahead. That's all you have to do. Let's cut the horse crap. Just write it down. Two pages of paper. Two pieces of paper is all it takes. Two pages. Single payer. Here's how it works. This is what you pay. This is what you get. Here's your card. You got health insurance for the rest of your life. God damn, that's difficult, isn't it?
Well, Mike, what do you know? You're just a talk show host. You don't know anything. Go back and talk about 9/11. Healthcare is over your head.
We'll be back after the break. The hour. Don in Baltimore writes, hello, Mike. I only saw a local news clip on the Obama Republican show, and it's just another rerun. Like Obama was saying, this is all about politics. The Republicans had 8 years, if not 30 years, to do something about health insurance and did nothing. So why would they want to help him when all they want to do is win Congress back and take the presidency away from him in 2012? Power and money are all they're about. 30 to 50 million people living with no health insurance doesn't mean anything to them. They don't care if they live or die. About Cheney and his campaign to be a thorn in Obama's side, isn't the whole damn Iraq-Afghanistan occupation and the phony war on terror and the torture chambers and secret prisons and spying on Americans all about what Dick Cheney has been about his entire life? Didn't he give birth to the whole damn Bush-Cheney war on terror? This is his gift to the world, his legacy, his wet dream. And with him nearing his personal end of times, Cheney, like the World War III he wanted to start with Russia, we just learned about, wants everybody to know that it was all about Dick Cheney. Cheney is yelling, I did it! And what are you, Obama, going to do about it? Answer, nothing. And meanwhile, Obama is doing just about everything Cheney wanted him to keep doing. Condi Rice said it herself. Obama would follow the script and stay the course. Cheney's laughing at Obama and all of us, and the media and the right-wing nuts love this stuff. It's stuff they can sell to those ignorant suckers who love Fox News. They all have to keep the mob happy, content, pacified, like as if America was under occupation by some foreign invader. They want us to think that they have everything under control, folks, so relax, pay your taxes. Thanks, Don. Baltimore. Yeah. Well, like I said, there's a way to do it. And we've talked about this and talked about this and talked about this and talked about this. If you really want to change things, folks, stop playing games about armed revolution. are you kidding? None of you people are Sheikh Khalid Muhammad. Only Sheikh Khalid was able to defeat the entire intelligence service of the Western world and the U.S. military and the U.S. security apparatus and airlines and radars and NORADs. Only one person on Earth could have done that. And we don't even know he's from Earth. He might be from some other star system, and that is Sheikh Khalid Muhammad. But you can't do that, you see. So forget defeating the United States military. The United States military will just snap its jaws and there'll be nothing left of you, probably not even a memory. It'll be so thorough. The way to stop it, sit down. What's going to happen? Is there a force on Earth? Well, a force within the control of the U.S. government or corporate America, same thing, that can make 300 million people get up, you know what I mean, or start moving or report to your job, soldier, or, you know, pick up your shovel, keep digging, or answer your phone, or turn on your lights. Is there? No. But we in the United States, we're not serious about this. We're whiners. We're complainers. We bitch and moan and wet our pants every time something happens. And then we send our people to die and to murder after a plot engineered against the United States by our own government is carried off. We don't want change. And that would be a definitive statement except for one really monstrous, ugly fact, and that is this country is going down. It is. Does nobody really get that? What was the jobs report that came out today? The experts thought that there would be 450,000 new applicants for unemployment insurance, and it was 495,000. These are first-timers, I think. First-timers, half a million, another half a million. Did nobody get this? And while that's going on, Whirlpool decides that they are going to ship 1,100 jobs out of Evansville, Indiana, down to Mexico. Does that not register? Does that not sink in? Except for the poor people who live in the town where this is going on, does it not? Is it not indicative of the whole scam? There's only one way to do this, and that is to everybody just sit down and stop until NAFTA is ripped up into a million pieces. And corporate America is told very clearly and very deliberately, reopen your factories, bring your means of production back here. Or if not, then we are going to systematically, this is just one idea, go through the industrial wasteland of this country and demolish every single factory. And we're going to become a purely agrarian society again. And the first industrialist that pops his head up, we're going to shoot it off. So either do it right or don't do it.
Speakers. It'll be our secret.
Ooh. 25 before the hour. Ooh. So, the 6-hour stalemate goes on. You and I both know that Republicans are no more going to cooperate than pee up a rope. They're just not going to do it. So I don't see where there's anything to be said. I have nothing to say about the so-called health summit. I thought it was a good thing insofar as it forced these monkeys to sit down and try to act like senators and representatives, these Republican monkeys. But it the system is broken. The system is broken by design. It's not that there's anything inherently wrong with our system of electing people. Not intrinsically wrong. It may need modification because we are not the same country that that we were 50 years ago or 100, 150, 200 years ago. We, you know, the Constitution was supposed to evolve. I'm sure our political system was supposed to evolve. There probably at some point along the way should have been a system, the system changed to encourage more political parties, a wider diversity of political opinion, maybe even switch the whole system itself, maintain certain documents, but switch to a parliamentary system to make the government more responsive to what people want. Whether it is a longer term for a leadership. And of course, the parliamentary system has nothing to do with individuals and everything to do with political parties. But maybe that's what should have happened. I don't know. At some point, there will be a postmortem done on the collapsed American political slash economic system because it is collapsing. And that's not necessarily bad news. When a system collapses, if it collapses in an environment where there are bright people to look at that collapse and say, well, hey, look, let's get creative. Let's build a new system. Let's take some of the good aspects of the one that's now dead, incorporate it into a new one, and keep going. I mean, we don't have to revert to our caves and just grow corn and carry spears around to keep the other tribe away from our corn, right? We don't have to revert to that. But we've got to start thinking, don't we? I mean, don't we have to, first of all, stop this move to fascism, to corporatism? It has to be stopped if we're serious about the continuation of liberty and justice for all, right? Huh? And again, what does it take? It does not take anything to do with weapons because that's a losing proposition. You can't do it. There's no way in hell you can't do it. The weapons technology is at such a level, and in the indoctrination of law enforcement, whether it's civilian or military, is so complete that, you know, don't forget what the oaths are all about, to protect and defend the Constitution, not to protect and defend the American people from tyranny, but to protect and defend the Constitution. Just keep that in mind, please. Even though Bush completely butchered it and prostituted it and bastardized it when he was in office, but there is no oath that anyone takes for military or law enforcement responsibility that says, you know, on my honor, I will do my duty to protect the American people. That's not there. It's to protect the Constitution. So, there is a way out of this, I think. There's probably more than one way. But the first thing is to get the attention. It's like the old farmer who can't get his mule to stop or go, you know. So he hits him with a 2x4. And somebody said, what the hell did you do that for? Well, we got to get his attention first. Then we can say, whoa, or giddy-app, or whatever. But first, you got to get the son of a bitch's attention. Isn't that true here? I mean, you and I don't count. Look, they're carving up $22 billion in bonuses on Wall Street again this year. That is the second or third biggest in history. While the rest of us are sitting down here, either we are two paychecks away from being homeless, or we're trying to figure out how in the hell we're going to afford health insurance. You know the riff. I'm not going to sit here and run through all this. You know what's going on. God damn, you know what's going on. So how do we get the attention of the overlords, the power? How do we get the attention? You know, I hate to be obvious, but the statement that real power only comes from the barrel of a gun is not true. It just isn't. There are enough instances in our immediate history where guns had nothing to do with it. But the power of persuasion of a sort that was immovable. This is what I'm going to do until you pay attention to what I'm talking about. Now, what do? Aim a rifle between somebody's eyes? No. You sit down. You just say, okay, when you want to talk, let me know. In the meantime, I'm going to bring this goddamn machine to a stop. Mario Savio said it way back in the 60s. I don't have the direct quote, but something. You know, there comes a time when the machine becomes so corrupt, so violent, so awful, that you have to literally throw your body onto the machine to stop it. Now, what did he mean? Well, Mario Savio and the free speech movement that began in Berkeley, they didn't throw themselves onto any machine. They sat their asses down and said, no, we're not going to do this. What did Dr. King do? What did Gandhi do? I mean, come on. This is not hard stuff. But the idea of, it's very easy to get sucked into violence. I feel violent about 90% of my waking hours because I'm so goddamn angry. But that's child thinking, kid thinking. Tonight when, after Kathy read to Molly, putting her to bed, and I went in, I tell her stories almost every night. I make stuff up. Kathy reads literature. Kathy's more educated than I am. But it came my turn, and I went in, and I couldn't think of anything. And if I can't tell her one of her favorite stories, stuff I make up, you know, sometimes she'll say, well, tell me about when you were a little boy. As she puts it, in the old days. Boy, if she only knew. But she'll figure it out pretty soon. So tonight I said, okay. So I told her a story, made up a story, only it was true. Because she asked me, sometimes she says, will you tell me a story? Will you tell me fiction? And tonight I said, tonight we're going to do nonfiction. So I told her a story about when I was 5 years old in kindergarten. And I had a girlfriend. Her name was Roberta Tremaine. We called her Bobby. Everybody called her Bobby, Bobby Tremaine. And she was my girlfriend. She was so much my girlfriend that I stole my mother's wedding band off the kitchen sink counter when I was 5 years old and took it. My mother used to take her ring off to wash the dishes. And I stole the ring and took it. It came from Woolworths. The thing cost about $3. And I took it into kindergarten. I gave it to Bobby Tremaine and we were engaged. And I was just deeply in love with Bobby Tremaine. And I was telling Molly this story. And I said, one day we're out in the playground right before class, kindergarten class. We're on the playground. And I looked up and Bobby was standing over by the monkey bars and Keith McCall was standing there talking to her. Uh-oh! So I went over and said, hey, what are you talking to Bobby Tremaine about? Well, none of your business. What do you mean it's none of my business? Well, to make a long story short, Keith and I wound up in a 5-year-old boy fight while Bobby ran to get the teacher. And both Keith and I wound up in the principal's office, and we got paddled. This is back in the day where you did this on the playground. You got your ass whapped with a paddle. And so I told Molly this story, and she was just fascinated. She said, you mean you got in a fight? You fought? Yeah, we fight, you know, like. She said, like punching each other like they do on Looney Tunes? I said, yeah, like they do on Looney Tunes, punching each other. And I finished up the story and kissed her goodnight and came down the studio, and I was thinking later, you know, that's so, I mean, that's really where it's at, right? When you're 5 years old, six, seven, eight, you fight. When you get a little bit older, you say, wait a second, that doesn't work. So to all you monkeys out there running around talking about how you're going to defend yourself against the government, no, you're not. You're not going to defend yourself against a goddamn thing. The government, whatever that is, and it's not going to be liberals. It's going to be right-wingers. It's going to be Bush types. It's going to be corporate Blackwater types. They will hunt you down like a goddamn dog and put a bullet right in the back of your head, and then it's all over. But there's a better way to do it. And it's by saying, no, I'm going to sit down. I'm not going to do a goddamn thing until you listen to me. That's how you do it. Can you accept that, right-wingers? By the way, about a week or so ago, David Cole, writing at The Nation, talked about or wrote about the fact that the Justice Department's Office of Professional Responsibility, OPR, Justice Department's OPR, was expected to release its report on the lawyers who put together the Bush administration's architecture for torture. Remember, we talked about it. The report came out, and you know what happened. The report said that okay, they had acted improperly, but no recommendation for any kind of disciplinary action, not disbarment, not. The one freak losing his judgeship, nothing. The Obama Justice Department stamped its seal of approval on the behavior, the illegal behavior of the highest members of the Justice Department and its advisors during the Bush-Cheney years. A stain against the rule of law in this country that will be there forever until these rat sons of bitches are put on trial, and they probably never will be. So the idea of the United States being a nation run by the rule of law, well, it may have been a joke over the past 30 or 40 years. Now it has become what's beyond a joke, a criminal farce. It's ridiculous. And the rest of the world, the rest of the civilized world, probably doesn't give a damn, although there are certain little enclaves of respect for the law that do still exist. Apparently one of them is in the courtroom of Judge Baltazar Garzon of Spain. He has opened a formal criminal investigation of Mr. Bybee and John Yoo, two of the lawyers. Jay Bybee and John Yoo, they were the principal authors of the initial torture memo. So while we're not going to do anything, the Spanish judge, Garzon, he's the guy who indicted General Augusto Pinochet in 1998 for, among other things, authorizing torture while serving as Chile's self-appointed president. So this judge has shown himself unafraid to call torture something other than poor judgment, which is what our Justice Department called it. In March of last year, Garzón, according to David Cole, Garzón took up a complaint filed against these two. He has completed the initial inquiry and determined that a full formal criminal investigation is warranted. A Spanish judge, not an American judge, not an American a criminal investigation. No, no, of course not. Not in this country. This country is dying. When the rule of law can become so perverted and turned into dust, as this ruling the other day by the Office of Professional Responsibility of the Justice Department, that John Yoo and Jay Bybee are guilty of nothing but using poor judgment, then the goddamn country is mortally wounded. You know this as well as I do. You know this. You know this. That's why you feel so rotten lately. That and the fact that you probably don't have a job. So, the most the Justice Department was willing to do is slap Bybee and use wrists. No criminal investigation, David Cole writes, has ever been instituted, not by Attorneys General Ashcroft, Gonzalez, or Michael Mukasey, all of whom are personally implicated in the Justice Department's authorization of these torture methods. Not by Eric Holder, who has opened only a limited criminal investigation of CIA interrogators. It may seem odd, David writes, that Spain, not the United States, is undertaking a criminal investigation of U.S. government officials for torture. But that's exactly what the Convention Against Torture contemplated. Countries all too frequently seek to cover up their own acts of torture. So the convention obligates signatory states, of which I believe we're one, to investigate credible allegations of torture. And it also recognizes that such crimes can be prosecuted anywhere. As President Reagan explained when the United States signed on to the Convention Against Torture in 1988, this is Reagan, quote, "The core provisions of the convention establish a regime for international cooperation in the criminal prosecution of torturers, relying on so-called universal jurisdiction. Each state party is required either to prosecute torturers who are found in its territory or to extradite them to other countries for prosecution." End quote, Ronald Reagan, 1988, when the United States signed the Convention Against Torture. God damn! So, in his decision authorizing the Spanish case to go forward, Judge Garzón emphasized that Spanish citizens held at Guantanamo had been victims of the policy. Judge Garzón also stressed that U.S. authorities had not instituted any criminal investigation themselves and, in fact, had not even responded to his formal request for information to Attorney General Holder in May of 2009. Garzón's opinion implied that if we took our legal obligations seriously, there would be no need for a prosecution overseas. But treating the matter solely as an ethics issue, as our Justice Department did, not a potential crime, and labeling it only poor judgment, hardly satisfies U.S. international obligations. What we need to do, truth seekers, is tear up every single treaty we've ever signed because we no longer honor any of them. We should not leave accountability for our own crimes to the Spanish court. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. I'm glad you've tuned in. The phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you'd like to join in the conversation. John is in Los Angeles listening on KTLK. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike. Hi, speakers. I want to keep this call positive. I'm very pleased, Mike, that you're talking nonviolence this time. And I also want to say that physical violence is one thing, but psychological violence is another. And I would hope to keep this in a cycle, socially positive tone. I would appreciate if you'd tone down your hatred for other people, regardless of who they are, because that is socially violent.
Well,
psychologically violent.
I wish I could do that because
it's difficult.
I wish I could do that because I have enough understanding to realize that hatred sometimes can damage the vessel in which it's carried to a far greater degree than the object upon which it's poured. Having said that, however, I've spent the better part of the last 30 years trying to not feel hatred and for people that are destroying, utterly and absolutely destroying so many lives. I'll tell you something. Hatred is the only honest emotion I can come up with when I see a government order the murder of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis because that government wants the oil. Now, you may be a more highly evolved human being than I. I will stay here and deal with my hatred, and it will come out, and I will mention it on the air, and I will, somebody might say, well, Malloy, you wallow in it. Yeah? Okay. Fair enough. I'm honest about it. I don't cover it up. If you are a more enlightened creature than I, God bless you. But I'm not.
Don't get me wrong.
Let me finish.
Yeah.
I'm not at your level. So I'm still down here in the swill. And when I see the kind of stuff going on, in the name of my country, in the name of me, because I'm a citizen, and realize that I am practically powerless within this system to do anything on my own, then hatred is what comes out of me. And I'm not ashamed of it. I don't apologize for it. If it offends you, not to be a smartass here, but if it offends you, my hatred offends you, that, my friend, is your problem.
Doesn't offend me.
Well, no, don't let it concern you.
It doesn't need to concern me.
Wait a second. Let's go at this. I talk, you talk. If it concerns you, then do everything you possibly can to enlighten the entire planet so that people like me will be elevated by and again, I'm not trying to be a smartass here. I'm just telling you what I'm thinking as you talk. So that people like me can rise up with people like you. In the meantime, this kind of stuff that's going on evokes nothing out of me but hatred, and I will I'll let that be known. That's just the way it goes. Okay, go ahead, your turn. Hello? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Now, I am as angry as you are about things that are going on that have gone on. All right? And some people may call me a bleeding heart. But I feel that there is a difference between anger, frustration for what's going on, and trying to find somebody to pin it on, somebody to be an enemy of, somebody to hate. I don't think that is a progressive, a positive way of finding solution, at least in a social way. If I can destroy myself with frustration and anger. At least, but that's me personally, not socially. Not with anyone else.
All right. Well, listen, John, I appreciate what you have to say. I really do. But you're repeating yourself now, okay? I am me. You are you. You can make a very strong case for, you know, not being enraged and full of hatred. And believe me, I've heard that case made many, many, many times. I have read many books on enlightenment, listened to many lectures on the same topic. And again, I'm not ashamed or embarrassed to say now the reaction from me is hatred. I hate people who are given the life force, whatever that is. You may call it God. Somebody else may call it spirituality. Let's just call it life force. People who are given the life force by accident, just simply because their two biological parents happen to have sex and there happen to be a commingling of sperm and egg, and boom, a person pops out. They had nothing to do with choosing their life. So they have life. It is simply an absolute wild ass roll of the dice that this person happens to exist, and then they take that existence and use it to kill and destroy and maim and pervert and lie and cheat and steal and subvert and bring the whole goddamn planet, the solar system, the universe into total collapse like a huge sucking black hole. You bet your ass I will hate that person endlessly and forever. After I'm dead, I will hate that person or group of people. If I am reincarnated as a goddamn flea, I will hate that person. If my existence becomes nothing but a boop, I will still hate that person. So, thank you for the advice on how to run my moral or spiritual life. I don't know anything about you. You may be a professor emeritus of ethical behavior. I don't know. But let me just say it this way. People that, to me, are far more evolved or brighter or smarter than you are and I am have given me the same advice, and I've said the same thing to them. This is where I'm at. This is where I will remain. I hate people who destroy everything that so-called progressives or decent people or human beings or any kind of living organism is supposed to work toward. I hate people who threaten with nuclear weapons. I will hate them forever. And I hate people who do the things that are being done on a daily basis. And again, I've had versions of this discussion many, many times. I get emails, Malloy, clean up your act, clean up your language. No. God damn it, no. If what you hear on this program offends your progressive sensibilities, there are other programs to listen to where you won't hear this. Okay? It's very simple. Very simple. I've laid out, what I see as not a solution, but a means of getting the attention of the bastards who are ruining everything in this country, on this planet. And it's nonviolent and it's effective. But in the meantime, I hate the sons of bitches, and I will hate them forever. Like I said, I will hate them when I'm dead and rotted, my body is decayed, back into dust. I will continue every atom, every fiber, every electron, every minute subatomic particle of me will hate these son of a bitches forever and ever, world without end. Amen. Do I make myself clear?
Talking to myself in public, dodging glances on the train. And I know they've all been talking about me. I can hear them whisper, and it makes me think there must be something wrong with me. Somehow I've lost my mind.
gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Scott is in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Hey, Scott.
How are you, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. You made a mention last hour about the futility, if I understand what you're saying correctly, the futility of picking up arms and actively trying to fight against oppression, and yet simply sitting down having a powerful effect on it. I think that was the gist of what you were saying.
Yeah, pretty much. Given, this is not 1770. This is 2010.
You know, I think it's kind of, well, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, I think it's kind of ironic on that. A friend and I just last weekend visited the newly opened, it took 10 years to fund it, construct it, and open it. If you're familiar with the Piedmont Triad, I'm in Winston-Salem. A few miles from here is Greensboro.
Right.
And they just opened the brand new International Civil Rights Center and Museum over there at Elm and February 1, which, of course, February 1, 1960,
right,
is when the four A&T students literally went into Woolworth and did nothing more except, with a very simple plan of action, walk right in there and in open, peaceful but open defiance of Jim Crow, sat down at the lunch counter at Woolworth and started a change that went on forever from that one act.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's just, it's awe-inspiring and fascinating. My friend and I took a tour of that museum. They had the Hall of Shame up there and a lot of the pictures and the genuine, the seats, that the actual seats that were at that lunch counter, a lot of the original stuff in there. And just to imagine, I guess the very first kickoff to civil rights would have been Rosa Parks, and then a few years later, this event right there in Greensboro at that very spot.
Right.
And it's breathtaking and awe-inspiring to take in the gravity and imagine just four guys sitting down, blowing the roof off of a 200-and-something-year-old evil, ugly institution. I just found it breathtaking.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you might kind of find that an interesting sort of a dovetail with what you were talking about.
Well, yeah. I mean, that comes out of my generation. I was in high school when that occurred. I remember, and then I took off with a friend of mine, and we traveled through the South and watched the same kind of lunch counter demonstrations in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm acutely aware of the effectiveness of that kind of action. And that was kind of my point earlier tonight. The idea, and I've talked about this before, the idea that there is any way to, through armed resistance, try to fight the corporate state in this country, that's madness. And the people who are out here running around talking about, well, we're patriot groups. You can go to these websites, and I'll tell you, when you read, what some of these clowns are talking about, you know, with their weapons and their this and their that, and, you know, they're waiting for the day and, the president and the liberals are coming and they're going to get our gun. You know, you read that stuff and you realize that these people are clinically insane. They're just totally, totally nuts. There have been instances in history, obviously, where armed resistance was the only way to go. But we're not there, not in this country. That doesn't exist anymore. And besides, that brings about an awful lot of death and destruction. The quickest way, in my opinion, and the most effective way to overthrow tyranny is to stop cooperating with it.
Right.
That's all.
Yeah. And it's, like I said, it's interesting. And that's not to say that some arrests didn't occur. I mean, some did. But
sure, they did. And those students were cursed at, spat at. They were called everything except human beings. But they had the force of morality and the right kind of force on their side. They didn't take up guns. They didn't start beating people up. They just made a very clear, obvious statement. I am a human being, and I will sit at this counter, and I will get my grilled cheese. And it was very simple, very simple.
Yeah.
So
I think one of them actually ordered a cherry pie. But yeah, I mean, if you ever travel to the area, obviously, I wish there was.
I lived in Raleigh.
Okay.
Yeah, I went to school at NC State.
Yeah.
I didn't graduate from there, but I'm real familiar with all of Western and Central North Carolina. I used to hang out up there. Oh my God!
If you make it to the Piedmont Triad, visit Greensboro. You'd probably enjoy a visit to that museum. It's really.
I've been thinking about it ever since it opened. The next time I come up there, that's absolutely where I'm going. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Yep, you bet.
All right, man. Appreciate you checking in. We'll be back.
Enter the door, and the number her killers had given was 4. She asked for a blessing, but asked for no more. And the choir kept singing of freedom. Shook the ground, and people all over the earth turned around. For no one recalled a more cowardly sound, and the choir kept singing of freedom.
Are you burdened?
Too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
So I don't understand why promises are snapped in two, words are meant to bend. Bigger, better.
It is 25 before the hour. Chuck is in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right. I wanted to talk about passion.
Okay.
You have passion. Alex has passion. Tom Harbin has passion. But passion has a lot of different faces, and the kind of face that you put on passion is the kind that we need. We need it so desperately. We need a Teddy Roosevelt, okay? We need a Lincoln. We need somebody like that.
Mm.
What that caller was talking about in terms of talking about you spewing hatred, you're not spewing hatred. Not towards people, towards actions. When Republicans talk about hatred and hating blacks or hating Jews or hating liberals, they're doing it because they were told to do it. It's a socialized behavior. It was bred into them starting from the day they were born. It was melted into their mind. What you're spewing is not that kind of hatred. What you're doing is you're trying to express anger at what the truth is about what's going on with this country, and your anger is directed towards the people who are doing it. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. And we need that kind of passion to lead a movement to save this country. Because I'm here to tell you right now, I'm about ready to leave. And on my way out, I'm about ready to extinguish the flame at JFK's grave.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's done. It's already done. And nobody seems to realize it. Because nobody has the passion to crack a book or to sit down and look at the news in a way that is objective and intelligent and realize just how far we have really shifted to the right. When the Republicans say that CNN is a leftist channel, are partially right. It is left of where they're at. But this country has shifted so far to the right that a right channel, like a conservative channel like CNN, which as far as I'm concerned is well into the conservative category, okay, is considered the left today.
Yeah.
And people who are younger do not appreciate what they have. They do not appreciate what has happened to get them where they're at, and they have no freaking idea of what's coming. And they are not going to crack a book to find out.
Well, and that to me is the sad part. And listen, Chuck, thanks, man. I appreciate what you had to say. Again, I don't have any problem with my anger because and in some instances, just a slight correction, it is directed, my rage, my hatred, it is directed at people who are doing this deliberately, doing it for sport. But, you know, as far as younger people, excuse me, my next youngest after 5.5-year-old Molly is my son Chris, who's 31, and he made some very deliberate career moves and decided to go back to school and get degreed in biology and nursing. And we were talking today, and he's working his ass off. He works at a hospital. He's in school full time. His wife is in law school full time. And I mean, the two of them are just beating themselves to death to get educated because they know, they understand what's coming. And that's what Chris and I were talking about. His wife, Katie, got her degree in environmental science here at Emory University in Atlanta and then decided that the only way to make that effective is also get a law degree so he could sue the sons of bitches that are destroying the planet. And Chris is interested in biology and medicine. He doesn't have the time, and we as a family don't have the money to send him to medical school. So as a second course of action, into nursing, BSN first, then an MSN, and then whatever comes after that. I don't know. But they understand full well what their generation is facing. We were talking today. I said, Chris, you and Katie are going to have to really figure out a way to hold on to the side of the cliff for at least the next 20 years, because what's coming to this country is a complete, I hate this term, paradigm shift. Everything about this country that that my generation was brought up to believe, that my children's generations, and I've got them in two different generations, what they were brought up to believe, all of that stuff is now on hold. The ideas are still there. There's no question about that. But the application of those ideas, when we have a criminal enterprise and call it government, and then do nothing when a new administration comes in to not just to rectify the criminal activity, but to hold those accountable who committed the criminal acts accountable and put the sons of bitches in jail where they belong, then that speaks volumes about where this country is in terms of its collective morality, its collective definition of ethics, and the fact that there are 300 plus million of us who for some reason can't figure out what to do. That's the part that is just mind-boggling to me. We don't have to do anything. That's the point. We don't have to break ourselves into guerrilla organizations or cells or phone trees or you know, all we have to do is nothing. All we have to do is to come to the awareness, and apparently most of us have not, that we have lost control. This is not a government of by and for the people anymore, and we're not going to get it back by shooting the people who did this, because a lot of them are dead already anyway, physically and or spiritually dead anyway. You know, that's and they've got the guns. So how do we respond? Well, it just seems to me that we respond the way we are designed to respond when faced with these kinds of odds. Either we just give up and live as slaves while everything is just disappearing. You know, I'm one of the last people to accept that premise, too. You know, I've held on to hope and well, we're going to pull out of this. Well, yada, yada, yada. That's one of the reasons I wrote so much on the blank slate that was Barack Obama, because I honestly believe that when he became president, that he would stem the tide. He would be the boy with his thumb in the hole of the dike and, you know, stop the wall from exploding with ocean water and drown us all. But he didn't do that, nor did his attorney general. And these grinning sons of bitches, did you see the video today? Bush went to see Cheney at Cheney's home in wherever the hell he lives. I don't know. Big old nice house, though, huh? And there's that grinning monkey getting out of the SUV, Bush. And then there's his controller, Cheney. And these two grinning war criminals stand there. It might as well have been Eichmann and Himmler. But it wasn't. It was Bush and Cheney. There they are. Ah, hey, how are you? So when we've come to the point where the absolute murder of hundreds of thousands of people in the name of corporate America, and specifically the oil and energy industries, when we will invade a country twice, when we will send thousands, tens of thousands of troops into Iraq for no reason, none except corporate demand, a country that does that is a country that is abso-goddamn-lutely doomed, utterly doomed. So, what happens to us, the inmates of that country? Well, we got a couple of choices. We can leave. Just, you know, pull up stakes and say to hell with this and leave. That's always an option until that no longer is an option. But right now, that's still an option. Or we can change it. How do we change it? Well, first, you got to get the son of a bitch's attention. How do you get the monster's attention? What do? You go to a meeting, you organize a third political party. Oh, I know. Let's all gather in downtown someplace and demonstrate. Done that. Been there. Got several T-shirts that prove it. So what do? These are extreme times. You take extreme measures. What does that mean? Well, if the thing that's grinding us into little pieces is a corporate behemoth that is unstoppable, then what do? What is the band Rage Against the Machine? It's right there. I mean, what do? You stop. You say, no, I'm not going to participate in my own self-destruction anymore. God damn it, it can't get any worse. If I sit down, it's only going to get worse if I keep walking along, listening to the same garbage and participating in the same destruction. So what do? You just stop.
I want to live in a country that's safe, in a land that's clean and free, for every color and culture, every person, every belief. Out of that house,
cuz 10 before the hour on the Malloy Show. Dave is in Shorewood, Minnesota. Hey, Dave. Yo, Dave.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Sorry, I had you on mute.
Okay.
Anyway, I was following out some links from the Northwood site.
Mm-hmm.
It got kind of interesting. You know, I'd been there before and read quite a bit of it, but it went down and came across
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, go over there and see what that's talking about. And then I came across this Operation Mockingbird and got into that a little bit. And it's talking a lot about how the CIA back in the 48 started to get into the propaganda business locally in the United States. And went into infiltrating, you know, just acquiring acquisitions, making deals with people in TV and
right.
papers and whatnot. And well, it's kind of been growing since then. It says at the beginning they're talking about it being kind of disproven or questionable, but then it goes down and you get to the church hearings back in 75 and
mm-hmm.
they're talking about it right there. So I would tend to believe that it's pretty interesting, pretty well proved out. And
well, the thing that is disturbing to me, and you probably got it too. Like you said, you've been aware of Northwoods. Somebody turned me on to that whole thing. Only about about 10 or 11 years ago. It was prior to 9/11, and when 9/11 occurred. I didn't think about Northwoods right away because I was just dumbfounded. Like most of America, I sat in front of CNN and watched whatever was being televised. That's what I watched. But three days later, on the program I was doing at the time, somebody said, are you familiar with Northwoods and all of us, Operation Northwoods? And all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God. Because what happened on September 11th, 2001, is just precisely what was laid out. And I'm old enough to remember Lyman Lemnitzer, this crazy son of a bitch, this Air Force multi-star general who was chairman of the Joint Chiefs. He was one of the models for, what was the movie, Kathy? How I Learned to, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Yeah, I can never think of the subtitle. But we had, and the guy who was the head of the Strategic Air Command back in the day, too, we had some real, in the 50s and 60s, early 60s, these are the people that murdered Kennedy. There's no doubt about this. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and debate, Lee Harvey Oswald. Screw Lee. Harvey Oswald is a cipher in history. He had nothing to do with any of this except for being the patsy. But these Curtis LeMay was the other one. Curtis LeMay, Lyman Lemnitzer, what's his name? MacArthur, General MacArthur. These people truly believed because they saw that we could drop nuclear bombs on Japan and the whole planet didn't go into nuclear winter. All we did was kill hundreds of thousands of tens of thousands of people. They wanted to do it. They wanted to do it to China. They want during the Korean War. They wanted to do it to Russia. They wanted to do it to anybody who got in the way. They wanted to do it to Castro. But the problem with these murderous sons of bitches was they needed to have their excuse, their rationale, the reason for doing it. So the whole Operation Northwoods was, I don't know how to put it. It was supposed to be a bunch of people who defeated the intelligence and early warning systems and the military of the United States with suitcase bombs. I believe that was the style back then. They were going to hijack airplanes and fly them into buildings. They were going to assassinate, shoot people down on the street. And it would be done by a whole cadre of Lee Harvey Oswalds. So it didn't happen because they were satisfied in murdering Kennedy. Just getting Kennedy out of the way was enough. Let's kill him. Because he wants to end the war in Southeast Asia. He's too much of a coward to look what he did with the Cuban Missile Crisis. He figured out a way. He agreed with Khrushchev that Khrushchev would take the missile sites out of Cuba. We would take our active missile sites out of Turkey. They hated him. They wanted war. They wanted nuclear war. They wanted it as much as they wanted to get laid, probably even more. We want this. We want to destroy everything that's going to challenge us over the next 50 years. So why is it so goddamn hard when that is a matter of actual, truthful, verifiable history of the United States? Why is it so difficult for so many people to understand that what occurred on 9/11 was another operation of exactly the same, only this one they pulled off? And the reason they did it is they had a Bush and Cheney in the office, not a Kennedy and Johnson. God damn it, why is that so hard to understand? It is a simple reality. Boom! End of discussion. Now, what do you do about it? What do you do about it? Huh? What do you do about it? At what point do you stop participating in the application of tyranny in your own goddamn country? At what point do you say, no, I'm not going to participate in that anymore? And once you make that decision, how do you bring that into a workable plan? What do you do? Do you learn how to shoot or do you learn how to sit? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Mallory.